Rave Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of AV Insider, the only podcast recorded in 4K. And today, I have, as usual, some special guests who I will announce shortly. As always, I have my two sponsors that I'd like to thank, and thanks for being a part of this long journey we call AV Insider. My sponsors are Hypersun. If you're a commercial integrator, you should at least be trying to get into the digital signage space. Hypersun, if you go to hypersun.com, provides such solutions. And if you're not doing, at least try and dabble in that a little bit. Check them out at hypersun.com. And for all the rest of our goody stuff that we all integrate into, connect, and beat our heads against every day, Atlas Sound makes speakers, cables, connectors, amplifiers, mic stands, and all that good stuff. You can check them out at atlassound.com. And as I mentioned, I have two special guests, and these guys are kind of like my, the guys that always make fun of me every day for my whole life. And I'll introduce them now. It is David and Steven Mota.
You know, they've done studies. 60% of the time, it works every time.
And Steven, you're here as well. Say hi, please.
Hello.
Supposed to say hi, please.
So these guys are also in the audio, video, and automation industry, and they are kind of like the brains behind my brain. So every funny thing I've ever said is pretty much the stuff that they're saying. I just kind of stole it, but don't tell anybody. Today I kind of want to talk about like their backgrounds and some of the things. Today is New Year's Eve where I am, and when this gets posted, it'll probably be a new year. So I'd like to talk about a few of the things that we've seen that have been kind of cool in this last year and the most popular items that people have installed in their homes, whether it be full-fledged automation or kind of like the individual consumer style do-it-yourself automation gadgets. And then we'll get into a few a newer style topic. CES is starting in about 1 week, so we're going to, these guys are going there. These are my AV insiders down at CES in Vegas. They like to remind me that I'm not going.
No, you're not.
So
we won't be there.
So they will be there, and we're going to talk about, you know, some good things to see that we can expect to see there.
So definitely meet up with us, buy us a beer. Hey, ladies, what's going on?
If you see someone that looks like me, maybe a little bit smarter and more intelligent, that's probably them. You can check them out. Both of them are on the Twitters, but probably aren't that active. I'm not sure if either one are.
No.
But if you feel the need to follow them, you can. One, I think, is steven.mota. David, I think, is at crazedj.
With a K.
With a K. At crazedj. You can check them out on the Twitters. Both are also on Instagram. Love to be social here. Steven is Sabotage, spelled in Leet, so if you can figure that out, that's what it is.
It's actually spelled incorrectly.
Is it?
Yeah.
We'll put it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes. and David is crazedj, again, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Taking that over.
So now getting into audio, video, and automation, what are some of, like, I would say, like, the, if you could pick one item, what is the number one thing that people have asked for in their homes this year?
Not one thing.
What are you getting, Steve? What are they asking?
Is it like a universal remote? Is it like, you know, is
at the basic level, a lot of them, I mean, obviously people with their TV, it's going to be some sort of universal remote, I think, at the most basic level.
Yeah, I have to agree with
like
that.
For
definitely.
You, whether it's going to be an MX remote or...
Whether that's a Harmony
or something basic.
So someone's universal remote.
I mean, there's a lot of people just getting TVs without remotes, but I mean, they want to take it a step further, at least it's a remote. And then, of course, you have your automation system.
Yeah, exactly. Which actually, now there doesn't seem to be as many people in the universal remote market.
No,
so
they kind of
UEI kind of
fall. You mean less manufacturers?
Less manufacturers. Really, now it's just kind of, you have Universal, RTI, is it Pro Control?
Logitech,
which
Pro Control looks like.
Dying off, or what's that deal?
I don't know what's going
someone,
on.
Exactly. Waiting for someone to buy them out, but Pro Control, which is sister or parent company, is actually RTI. And really, that's about it, I think.
Yeah, there might be another smaller company in there somewhere, but yeah, it's. I don't see much more of anything besides that.
Nothing really big coming out.
Yeah, and obviously, you have your big automation companies, but for the most part, you're not putting those in just for a remote. That'd be a full automation system.
So, some sort of universal remote, whether it's RTI or Logitech or...
Yeah.
Been getting a lot of distributed audio systems, too.
Now, distribute audio from like Sonos or larger scale systems, or I mean, at least you can do Sonos large scale systems too. But I mean, not just Sonos, like whoever, you know, someone switched like through Crestron or AMX or like a Savant has their deal, and Nuvo. Or
I've been getting a lot of Sonos. Steve, what have you been getting?
Me personally, it's been a lot of Nuvo. I've been doing more of their wireless system now, but I've still done a lot of the Concertos. Their
so
wired home systems.
More of the new their new wireless system versus the hardwire system?
No, I've been specifying some of the wireless systems.
Oh.
Just because for one, the app itself is way better written than the current one for the Concerto. It's kind of terrible, I think.
Plus, you don't want to run the wires. No, I'm just kidding.
And I'm lazy. And that's a big part of it, definitely.
So, you hear that, Nuvo? Please update your Concerto app for all us integrators. We love you, but the original app needs a bit of work.
It does, yeah, for sure. But no, the wireless system is pretty great, actually. The app works fantastic with joining, you know, things in groups and playing along, definitely. A lot of nice features for easy for Pandora or setting up like a playlist where you can actually have it go from a certain Pandora station to, you know, jump into another song and kind of switch throughout. It's, and it makes it kind of nice.
Now with Nuvo's wireless system, what I keep hearing, and I don't really have much experience with it, is that it has a better audio support in that, like, you know, versus like Sonos, which is still a really good product, and I get a lot of people asking about that. Especially if it's just someone at home that wants some sort of distributed audio and they can just go buy it, it's Sonos. Nuvo's claim is that that supports better audio files.
Like,
it's also actually have a less of a compression rate going
like
on with
like a FLAC or something?
Not necessarily that, just higher bit rate, yeah, compression. It doesn't have to deal with as much. I guess something that, at least coming from them, that it had to deal with, it was theirs, whether it's on their own like Wi-Fi network, where the problem with, I guess, apparently Sonos is that every time that they bridge off of each other, that it's the signal gets degraded. And goes
just like wireless repeaters, but right?
Yeah.
And with cuts in half.
Exactly.
But okay. you can hardwire all the Sonoses to each other.
Yeah,
and
I
wonder
that.
If that's going to actually fix the problem there. That's kind of a weird thing with Sonos, though. Like, one of the main Sonos units has to be hardwired to the router or a switch. And then none of the other ones technically should be hardwired to those. They have to be hardwired to each other. They have an dual port Ethernet on there, so they can be looped through. But I think that makes it more reliable.
Well, with Nuvo's, theirs, you can hardwire one, it won't do anything. They won't actually wirelessly repeat to each other. And actually, you have to utilize their own
bridge, basically.
Well, it's a wireless access point, yeah.
Really?
So it's one access point.
And they don't
But
each device doesn't repeat, whereas like Sonos, each device will
That's
be a repeater.
Correct.
As well.
That's
what
you're
saying,
right? Hardwire them all, or you get one of these things in there, which basically it's actually
basically
a repeater, it's like MAC address filter
per zone,
huh? And it only filters in their units, of
yeah.
course, to work with it.
So you basically need a repeater per zone versus like Sonos.
No, not per zone, just to cover throughout the house. It's like putting multiple access points in for a wireless network.
Exactly.
You want to make sure you get signal throughout the house to wherever your Nuvo devices are.
So what's the range on the Nuvo repeater then? Is it pretty
That's always
high?
A hard thing.
Like,
depends on what's in your walls.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. So
it can be
so kind of like
attenuation realms.
Okay. Well,
I'm sure they have some sort of rating if it's not going through anything at all.
Yeah,
in an open field, Johnny, it works great.
That's the same thing with you look at any access point and routers, they usually won't tell you a distance on it.
No.
They can't. They'll say maybe like a dB rating, but it'll never actually
happen. Well, you know, like,
and they'll
like,
say one technology works further than another, like an AC might work further
than
distance.
Well, like an example,
then,
like with
like
Neutron's deal, you know, like the Radar 2 system, they say, you know, it's a 60-foot diameter,
right.
30-foot radius, but then they actually get it in certain places, you can't get through a stupid wall.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've had a lot of luck with the wireless stuff, surprisingly. It's usually my thing is that if it says 60 feet, I always find it goes a lot further.
In a field.
It's like the older Crestron remotes. Like the older ones, the ones with the MX-based remotes.
Oh, yeah.
Those worked like a champ through
yeah.
walls galore. The newer ones don't go nearly as far.
Okay, so now moving on to TVs, right? Flat panel TVs, things like that. Of all the TVs you guys have installed throughout the year, how many... Percentage-wise, how many say will have like a smart hub, and if they didn't have a smart hub, did they opt for like an Apple TV or some sort of like, you know, like smart hub box, you know, whether that's...
Well, for me, most of them have smart features on them. Not all of them, but most of them do. The usually the ones that don't, people are just getting a cheap TV to replace a small 90% one.
Probably of them already have
Yeah, probably 80-90%
I mean, because it's rare that TVs now are made without them, for the most part.
In case you'll find the ones where they, you know, they go in the store. Price. Yeah, the budget one, they're sale for like $500, whatever. It's like 60-inch, $500.
Well, because Samsung still sells some that don't have it. It's their cheaper models. And I think it's the smaller TVs also.
Right, because someone wants that 60-inch TV because, oh, it's, you know, it's a deal. Like, yeah, it's a deal.
Yeah.
It's 60-inch.
Well, I don't think I sold but a Samsung TV that... was didn't. Under like this. Oh, that was under the 6,000,
right?
Oh, so
right.
Okay. It's always 6,000 and up.
But to tell you the truth, like the lower models of some of those TVs, even their internet features are kind of garbage. Like you're almost better off getting for internet features at least. The TV is fine, but you're better off getting another box like a Roku or an Apple TV.
Generally, people features. Have those already when some sort of device that has at least Netflix
player
built into it.
When
receiver.
Like all your game consoles do, and your media boxes, Blu-ray players, everything pretty much does it. Your TV does it. It's just, which one am I going to do Netflix on? Shoot, my tablet can do it. Like,
right.
Just,
exactly.
Pretty soon, my toaster's going to do it.
Your TV does it. Your TV has Netflix built into it, my Blu-ray player, my Xbox, and like I don't have a TV and all this.
Yeah, it's quite a bit, but I mean, most people are getting it on there, and I'd say majority of the time people are using it for like Netflix. Netflix is probably the number one app people are using on there, followed by like Pandora and probably YouTube. I would say those are the most popular that I've seen used on there.
But like Amazon Prime,
no,
Plus,
that's
things like that.
I run into Amazon Prime every now and then. I mean, people have it for shipping. I have it, but I rarely ever use the video service because it's not as good as Netflix.
I try.
Sorry, Amazon, if you're listening.
We love you, but service isn't as great as.
If you upgrade it to on par with Netflix, I'd love it a lot more. But it's an awesome price, obviously. It comes with the Prime shipping and everything, and it's a great deal. It's just the video selection is not nearly as good as Netflix. So
at least the Prime selection, right? Like I tried it for a month. I still have today left of the month.
Yeah.
And it didn't. I mean, there's all these videos, but then like
there's some
the Prime selection you have to, like,
for,
you have to pay for. I'm like. I thought that was the whole point of, like, testing it out.
They have it separately. There's the Prime that's the Instant now, and there's a different one that's not part of that rating.
Isn't that kind of like with Netflix? You know, like, they say, you know, you have, like, this huge catalog, and it's all online, but they only give you this much, you know, a section of it, and if you want all the other stuff, it's like a direct...
disc.
Yeah, it's a disc only.
Well,
so
the movie industry doesn't want them to be able to stream it.
Right.
So they have to strike a deal to get it on streaming.
So isn't that... I guess that's slightly different.
Sure, pay quite a bit more to do streaming.
And now Netflix is doing 4K. What?
Love 4K TVs. I guess we get into the 4K debate now. 4K TVs are awesome. Not a lot of content, so it's still a little early. That's my whole thought on it.
Okay, you say your thought, and then I'll ask you the next question regarding 4K.
No, I think 4K is great. It just depends on the size of the TV. I mean, some of these manufacturers have been talking about what size TV they're going to put in. I think who was saying like a... We're going to come out with like a 46-inch 4K TV, which
that's kind of borderline where you might not notice it.
Only probably not
1080p is good there.
Yeah.
I mean, like when you get like to a 55 or higher, then you can start noticing it depending on how close you are to the TV, but that's kind of crazy. Like, I don't know. Like, I can understand these really big TVs, 65s, 80s.
65s and up, so I've noticed that all the time if you're watching, like, even some things in 1080, depending where you're sitting, you're... You can kind of notice a little bit there.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, they look amazing. And last year at CES, the 4K OLED TVs that they were showing off, you know, those things were just awesome. Like, I had to stop and just stare at it for a while, but the...
What are they branding them as? UHD?
Yeah, like the Ultra HD TVs.
Ultra HD and UHD, yeah. Which,
but until we start getting the content out there, obviously they're going to push the TVs first, which will make the content catch up to it, but... I usually like to be an early adopter on things, but that one's kind of like, I'm not really going to notice a difference until I get some content, like with a Sony, you get a little Sony media box to watch their movies in 4K, or
right.
Or I'll go get my own Red One camera just to shoot my own 4K and watch it on there, yay!
A lot of the devices have, the TVs do it as well, but the
like
scaling
yeah.
The 4K, like the TVs have their processing built into it, the Oppo Blu-ray players have the scaling 4K.
You just say Oppo because you have it. Come on, man.
Ooh. The Oppo Blu-ray player.
That's the Steve has in his
that I would like to get the newer version that has the Darby built into it.
Oppo, if you're here, we'd like to have a couple.
Take a couple, please. or even the receivers have the 4K scaling as well.
regarding the
Anko put that in earlier, too, like a couple years back,
they
right?
The 4K
scaling.
Yeah.
That was amazing when they
and everybody else just kind of did a 4K pass through, but they were one of the first ones to put, I think, scaling in there.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Go ahead, Johnny.
Okay, so I was going to go talk about. So David and I went to the Engadget SF meetup a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Down in San Francisco, and.
It was the bee's knees.
CES, or CEA, I should say, had their own little special booth upstairs where they had Sony's 4K TV and Samsung, LG, I think was there. But they were also showing, Sony had their own like little lounge, and they also had their streaming player, or not streaming, it's their 4K player.
The round media box.
Yeah, the round media server box. Yeah. And a couple episodes back, I had Frank Stearns, who's now the VP of custom integration and custom product over at Sony, and we talked, and he didn't say, but I know that Sony's making, so they have the 4K camera, they have 4K panels, 4K projectors, they have their new media players or media server, which
came out the 4K tablet too.
Sony's taking over.
See, so they have all these devices, and they also have their movie, Sony Pictures, Sony Music.
Right.
And so they can record
game consoles.
They can record all this stuff in 4K now. They have all this media, put it on their server, and I think this is where Sony is really going to be first in the industry to distribute all this stuff and have it ready straight to your. I think honestly that they're going to make this online store, where at some point you'll be able to just, you know, like you're in your theater, you have their player or their media server, and then you can just go to the panel, you know, what, let's say, you know, on your screen and select movies at 4K now that Netflix is doing stuff like that. But Sony is producing the content, or one of the content producers, I should say, straight from the camera and the recording artist, and that straight to your home. Like, you don't need to go to the store anymore, you don't need to do Redbox, you don't need to do all that stuff, you can just get it straight from Sony.
That's kind of actually, well, at least apparently how a lot of the movie theaters are actually going now, how they actually get the movies in. Is they download them onto, I guess, they have like a server thing, and after a while it expires, and that's so they have it in there.
Hmm. Sony had a cool thing going a few months back where if you bought a Sony, like select Sony TVs, I don't know if it was just at Best Buy or a few places, but it got you a subscription for 1 year to Hulu Plus and Netflix. It was pretty amazing. So, yeah, like it gave you a code on the TV, you activate the service. If you were already a subscriber with one of the two providers, then it would just add it to your account or just credit you.
Really?
Yeah, it was kind of cool. So like they get Netflix for a year and Hulu Plus. It's what a good way
that's
to
worth it. Yeah,
definitely. Show you that. I mean, even if people went out and just did, oh, you get a free 3 months or 6 months, that's a good way to get other people in who have never used it. Especially Hulu Plus. I mean, a lot of people have used Hulu, but Hulu Plus itself, people aren't really paying for it as much, at least in my experience that I've seen.
I don't know, man. I checked out Hulu Plus and initially I thought it was supposed to be like no commercials and all our catalogs were supposed to be there, and like it was like the opposite of that. It was still commercials, and it still didn't seem like they had full seasons like they claimed you on a lot of their things. And it was I was like, well, why don't I just stick with regular Hulu? It's free.
Yeah, but then of course you couldn't use regular Hulu like on a tablet or phone. You have to
switch
to the Plus. That's the same idea as what Spotify's been doing with their music.
Except Spotify now you can do straight to your mobile devices free. Now the
but is that just the radio service, or
they always had the radio service free? I think they added some other features.
But like the original Spotify is where you can just type in an artist and
stuff. Yeah, no, same. Right. So they just released it. So now you can go like to your mobile device, and like for me, like, you know, I got Android, so I downloaded the Spotify app, which used to cost money. It wasn't even able to do that.
Really?
And now I can just type in, let's say, whoever, you know, Daft Punk, and I can play any song from them. I get to pick, but then it does like randomized, basically, through the artists.
Okay, so you don't actually just get that like radio station thing they had before.
You know, I never even did that, honestly, because
that's what they had originally with the app. You get the app for free, and you only got the radio capability, which was kind of like a Pandora style thing, and that's all it did, unless you had the paid version. And of course, with the paid version, you get to stream it to like iPhone and a bunch of things. And in fact, I think you had it even on Spotify on the Sonos only worked to get the paid version.
Correct. I tried that yesterday. Yeah, you still have to have the paid version.
And the other thing I know that they had was, of course, like the offline view. So you can download them onto your computer, your phone, or whatever it is if you don't have any internet service. A lot of times I'll check one of my playlists. If I'm going to go out and drive when I'm going for work, whatever it is, and I'll have all my music I'm listening to. we want to run out of.
Does it download the playlist to your
phone? It actually does, yeah. So you can download each of the songs, yeah. It's offline mode.
But that's part of your subscription.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's what the $10 I'm paying for.
That's pretty cool, actually. And if you have a Sonos system or something that utilizes it, it's pretty nice to be able to just randomly pick an artist without having to buy music. Yeah.
Well, I know one of the new things that they added, which they didn't have previously unless I missed it, but I think it was added, was that you can, like, I can AirPlay it now to my receiver and everything else. Because they didn't have that from the Spotify app.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was doing that at my house. So
they just upgraded it to support AirPlay then?
Yeah. So I was doing that at the house the other day. I was playing my speakers and then Spotify just,
like... You think most apps with music or videos are going to add AirPlay and, what's the other one called for...
DMLA?
No, for the Google...
Oh, the Chromecast thing?
Chromecast. Is it just... Is it called...
I don't know what they call it for Chromecast. I have one...
But it's the same kind of, like, link for it when you do AirPlay. Same idea.
Same concept, yeah.
So you think that a lot of these people, the app makers and stuff, would add that into their applications. Just, I mean, it's nice and convenient to have that if you can AirPlay from a receiver or a little boombox or something.
See, it's coming up and stuff I've seen this year for consumer, what I would call consumer slash do-it-yourself home automation companies... like Dropcam, Nest, Philips Hue, Lockitron, things like that, where these items are something that the consumer can just go and buy for themselves. So this is what I would call like basic entry-level do-it-yourself home automation for someone that is like heard about it and wants to kind of get into it and not have to do full-fledged systems. Like Dropcam, company here out of SF, they are a little USB camera, and you can pair, apparently, what they claim is unlimited camera, which is ridiculous, but you can do as many as your bandwidth would support, I would assume. And they have the Dropcam, what they used to be called Dropcam HD, is now called Dropcam Silver, which is, I think, 720p, and the new Dropcam Pro is their new HD model, where you can zoom, it's got two-way audio. You can do the same deal logging from the app. Leo Laporte in Petaluma and his studio I've been to several times. They have one above their main rig, and it's pretty sweet. It just, like I said, mounts to the wall, plug in USB, and then feed it back through your system. And you could actually go, if you have the Dropcam F, you can log in to their studio right now and check them out. It's pretty interesting, and it's I think it's like $200. I can't remember how much the pro version is. It's somewhere around that. And so for someone who wants to get cameras in their house, it's a pretty inexpensive in comparison to some of the other cameras that are out there, and it's pretty simple for the homeowner to install. That doesn't have to have someone wire, you know, that cable in the home and have a DVR. Now, that being said, if you want a DVR, this is where, you know, pricing to Dropcam specific comes into play. It's kind of like where Boxy, you know, they did their thing where they, you know, if you wanted, they did their cloud service. You paid them whatever it was a month to record your shows. You had to pay them. Do you guys remember that through Boxy?
No, for Boxy. I didn't know that. That was
news to me.
It was right towards the end of their run before Samsung acquired them.
Remember we were living under that rock at that one time?
That's right.
No, but with Dropcam, it's pretty neat because you don't need your own DVR, and the cloud-based recording is pretty awesome. I mean, you figure... 7 days of continuous recording for $9.95 a month, and you can access it anywhere on the web with like your phone and stuff. That's
the app's cool, free. Actually. The app is free. Buy the camera and then.
But it's for the record. It's for the DVR recording on their site, right?
Like it's yeah. So they host it. Now the one thing that I might say with this is though, like people, you know, like with Boxy, you know, when you had that, and now it's gone. You can't buy a product. You can't get that stuff. It's all gone. Samsung acquired them, and that's the end of that. So what's to say something from, you know, someone else buying out Dropcam and then, like, you know, your media is stuck with them? Like, how do you get that stuff back later? Is it worth it for someone to go buy cameras for themselves and have a local DVR that, you know, like, say, you and I or whoever would install for them where they can keep all their personal content and not have to pay the monthly fee and just, you know, step it up and pay the initial, you know, upcharge or not upcharge, but... You know, the what no other people do. They put cameras on their house, have a DVR, and then they just record continually on discs.
I don't really think you necessarily need a DVR unless for some reason you got to keep recordings for a year for some reason. I mean,
well,
for
you know,
most
people, no, security issues.
Security issues, you'll notice it after within a month. So then you can just look back on video. This is 30 days of video. I mean, that's, or 7 days. I mean, most people will look back
for a month.
Or 7 days. I mean, you can record for 7 days at a time. You're gone for a couple days. You come back. Someone got broken into the house. You can access those recordings. I don't think it's going to come up where I go, hey, 6 months ago, what happened over here? Like, and most DVRs, how long they record. It depends on the hard drive, and it's just going to overwrite it, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be the same idea with the DVR, unless you get like one with the, you know, big storage capacity.
And the one at the office, like the furthest back I've ever looked, we were using a few times, was we went back like a week or two.
Yeah, and see, a 30 day would work perfectly right there. $30 a month, and then big deal. You know, you can record all kinds of video, and they just handle it there, and you can remotely access it. You don't have to set up remote desktop or anything to access the thing. It just,
yeah,
it's online.
Yeah, that's a good point. Definitely.
And it's easy for anybody to set up. I mean, you know, being like custom installers, obviously, you're like, oh yeah, give us a call, we'll install the surveillance DVRs, but you don't really need anybody to put a drop cam in, which is really nice. I mean, they're making these items now accessible for someone just to pick it up for, you know, oh, here's a Christmas present for you, and just put it in your house and
DIY. Another DIY, easy to pick up product that's been very popular within the last year, probably a little bit more, and now they've come up with a new product, is Nest. Nest makes a, from the person who created, it was one of the designers of the original iPhone, is that correct?
It's one of the engineers.
One of the engineers, thank you, Steve, of the iPhone.
The brain extension.
Created this learning thermostat, and it's really nice. And they also have come out with
the Nest Protect.
The Nest Protect. It's is it CO2 and
smoke?
And smoke?
Yeah.
So it's a 2-in-1 combo, which is nice. It's also very easy to install, just like the original Nest learning thermostat. Again, it's going to be a little more pricier up front, which has been, when I tell people about it, is, you know, it's the initial payment, or you make your payment up front, it costs a little bit more than just a standard, what I would refer to as dumb thermostat, but your regular thermostat doesn't learn, it doesn't do this stuff, it doesn't have this digital interface, you can't control it with apps and things like that. Also, I believe Nest thermostat is it open source, or that is...
At Cydia, they're talking about how they're releasing the API.
That's what happened. Finally. So this last September, yes. They've opened this up, and this was a big debate with some of the other integrators that I have out there, is trying to integrate to this thing, because people are just, like I said, going, you know, picking these things up and installing them and wanting us to talk to them, but they've been closed off, so...
Nest thermostats don't speak Chinese.
Oh.
No. But it's nice to put in like some sort of automation system, whether you put in like a Crestron or some sort of system, and you want it to talk with your Nest thermostats. I don't know. From my experience, it seems like the Nest thermostats are much better than almost anything else out there.
Definitely the best looking.
Yeah, best looking by far, right?
Some of the people I've talked to said, like, you know, like architects hate them for whatever reason. That they don't. Well, like, yeah, but they just don't like. Oh, you know, I don't like the look of it in this house because I built this house and this is just out of place. I'm like.
We don't wonder really, what thermostat look that you think in any of these like modern homes in.
Yeah.
Looks better than these old crappy white rectangles.
What thermostat looks good in the house? None of them look good.
Nothing at all.
The Nest is the nicest looking. Maybe it's because it's just a little deeper, a little thicker than other thermostats.
And when you put them in automation system, they all usually go in a closet anyway, somewhere where you're not going to be staring at them.
Yeah, if you have some sort of multi.
You wouldn't do that with the Nest, though, because they don't have...
a sensor.
There's no remote sensors.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
That's true. The sensor's built in.
Yeah.
So Nest, there you go. There's something we suggest. A remote sensor for Nest thermostat.
Sensor.
Either that would be sweet.
A wired or wireless remote sensor.
But since we're integrators, wouldn't we just be able to wire, you know, open up the API and have someone else talk with it? Or you don't think that would work?
Well, there's no spots to actually wire in a physical sensor into it. And then I guess they could have come out with a wireless sensor like Honeywell and a few other people have. Mm-hmm. And Lutron has it, and quite a bit of people. Actually, I think there's his Honeywell.
Break it open and hack it just to put a sensor in there.
Exactly.
What's your warranty right there?
Before you void your warranty, talk to one of us.
So Steve, you got one of these Nests in your baller bachelor pad. What do you think of it?
I like it a lot, actually. I don't know what I'm going to say now.
Speaking of Steven's baller bachelor pad, not only does he have Nest in his house, he He also has another consumer product that people use, can pick up, and I don't know how you would integrate to it yet, but it also falls in the line of basic kind of like do-it-yourself home automation systems. And I'm sure all these things you're going to be able to see at CES, whether they have new stuff or not, they're definitely going to be there. Philips has this product called Philips Hue that takes the place of your old incandescent bulbs, which, by the way, starting tomorrow, which would be January 1st, the 40 to 60 watt incandescent light bulbs, medium-based light bulbs, are going to be illegal to manufacture and import into the United States. So if you need those, get them right. Well, get them yesterday. This will probably be past that day.
I'm back in 20 minutes. Got to get those.
you can still get them. People will have them stock, but eventually that's going to go out of the way. And when you're doing larger homes, in a lighting system, some people still have those in some of their fixtures and older homes and still want to control those. So with newer style homes, you're probably doing low voltage or LED dedicated cans. So that wouldn't be a problem, but in some of the older homes, that's going to be an issue to try and switch over. So what you can do to replace those is what a lot of people are doing now. You are spending the money up front again. Philips has a product called Hue. It's a RGB 3 chip LED on the inside of a medium base incandescent style light bulb. They also have one that kind of fits the shape of, I believe, par 20,
I think, coming out.
Par 20 style lamp. So it's a bigger style lamping for some of those 5 and 6 inch cans in your house, or flood style lamping. But basically, you have an app, which is also free, but let's say you buy the package, it's probably like $200 or something like that. It comes with a little wired hub that you connect to your via Ethernet, and then sends a wireless signal out to these lamps. You put them on your so-called system, and your app can control individual lights that can be dim, and you can control the colors on any color on the RGB spectrum. This is another product, I believe, that's open source, where you can take a... Well, Steve, here, you have one in your house. What do you tell... You've
downloaded
a couple
cool
things
stuff.
Where you've, like, had it play to music and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, this is like one correction. I was wrong. It's actually a BR30.
Okay.
It's a BR30 lamp, and it looks like they also are...
Those look like those heat cells.
They actually have a Hue light strip. So you can use for like under cabs and stuff like that.
Oh,
things.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so all these are actually pretty common things that people come in and buy stuff from it at the store.
Like one of some of the cool stuff you do, like the location aware, it can turn off the lights when you leave.
That's one thing I really like, is the location aware is if I forget my lights on, that they're on, and I end up leaving it because my phone or whatever it is, it picks up and turns off my lights because it knows I'm no longer there. Or it can go in the reverse, is I'm coming home and turn the lights on. The other thing, yes, I've been screwing around with is the fact that if I'm playing any music, I can turn it on my phone. There's a app that I have that it's called, I think it's Hue Disco. It was like $1.99 or something like that.
Disco Fever.
And it picks up whatever audio it's playing through your, like, for example, my iPhone's mic. And it'll change all the Hue lamps to different colors and match change the music. It's actually pretty cool.
That's pretty cool, actually.
And
I like how you can actually pull up a picture in there and select a color from the picture
color
and have the lights change to
that
color.
Oh, you just grab on the picture and it'll match it?
And you can selectively, you can say, this bulb goes to this color, this bulb goes to this color, it's Christmas time, you have a red and a green bulb.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the pack comes with 3 bulbs, is
yes.
it? 3 bulbs, so that's a decent
that's
starter.
That's like their basic starter pack, which is not bad for what you're paying for. And again, people say, oh, it's really pricey. I'm like, yeah, but if you compare it to a regular incandescent light bulb, what does it do? Turn on, off,
well,
and you type to a dimmer.
Any real, I guess, LED dimmable lamp is really around that same price.
Yeah,
a single lamp here is
$59.95.
Yeah, can't
single lamp. No, single lamp
from
Hue.
Oh,
from there.
$59.95.
Not bad. Depending on the manufacturer, those lamps range about $40 a lamp, depending on who you buy it from.
And you can have it with you.
And they're not RGB.
Yes.
They're just, you know, one color. What, 3,000 Kelvin, 2,700 Kelvin. What was it, Dave?
Oh, I said you can. He can have it wake him up in the morning. You can set days and times. Where actually,
yeah, time clocks.
Oh, like scheduling?
Yeah. Yeah, so I can have it wake me up, my lights flash, or turn on the morning.
Bedtime.
Is that all something that's included when you buy it, or is it something
it's in the app?
That's all built into the app. All that is color, I don't know, the changes to the music, that was a separate application, but the Hue one does all that stuff. It can also... What was that thing you do?
You can put a timer now? If you put the timer on there?
I'm not doing the timer.
There's a timer function. You can turn off the lights or change color after a set amount of time if you wanted to. Like,
I might have to try that.
That's kind of cool. So they've added quite a bit more stuff. And like you said, I think that has open API, so it'll just keep adding new features. People can integrate with it. There was a ton of other stuff. Like if you got some sort of like a text message or
some sort of
tweet or a Facebook post, you can have it flash lights or do whatever you want, which is kind of cool. Some people, it might be kind of lame, but it's neat. You might, you know, oh, I got a text message and you know, lights flicker.
What was it? It was like IFTT or something. IFFT.
IFTTT.
It's a lot of T's though, isn't it?
That's a local startup out of San Francisco. It's
IFTTT.
If this, then that. So it's IFTT.
Okay.
But yeah, their slogan is put the internet to work for you. So, you know, let's say, you know, if someone mentions me on Twitter, email me or something silly like that, but it gets pretty advanced.
It's
like 50 different social networks and different things you can pull together, and you can do stuff like that to your lights, right? With a Hue, Steve.
Yes.
So you're basically creating these things. What they call recipes. But
they have quite a few already set up. There's
a lot of people have made them, and it looks like they've already Philips has made their own.
Look at that.
So that you can do it. You don't have to create your own, but if you're
begins to rain,
and want to mess around with stuff,
you can have it. If it starts to rain, it triggers your lights to go a different color. If you're tagged in a Facebook photo, if you receive email, certain time, a text message, there's all kinds of different triggers for it. That's actually pretty cool.
Blink, if I'm tagged in a Facebook photo, change my lights to red.
Your lights go crazy.
Every time you post anything about Johnny not being at CES while we're at CES,
lights will go nuts.
These guys like to remind me that I'm not going to CES. So all my friends are going to be at CES this year. Make sure you hang out with these guys because they'll like to remind them, oh, too bad Johnny's not here.
And we said we're going to wake him up early in the morning the day we're flying out and say, let's go to CES. Oh, that's right, you're not going.
Another really popular do-it-yourself/pickup item, I believe. I think it just hit shelves, but you can pre-order it for $179. It's called Locketron. It's a keyless entry using your phone. So this goes over your deadbolt on the inside of your house, and then you connect via Bluetooth, I believe, and you unlock the door. So it's like a kind of a keyless entry, basically, via your smartphone. And I've seen stuff like that with
Wi-Fi built in.
Well, yeah, not on this level. But, like, you know, this is like a, this was a Kickstarter campaign for a long time. And it's a pretty cool item. Other, high-end manufacturers are doing something like that, but they're not, like, at the level of via your phone. It was more of, like, a keyless entry with the number pad or the biometrics, like your iPhone now has, where you scan your thumbprint on there and things like that. Or, as a default, you know, you can just use a key.
There was one. It was at Kwikset.
That's someone else.
Kwikset. There was another one too. I think we have some in the warehouse. I just can't remember the name right now.
For an iPhone controlled.
No.
Kwikset was the one I knew of, the main one. That actually looked just like a normal lock, and it wasn't like one of these big ridiculous touch screen things on your door. I think Slage has one as well.
Slage. There you go. They're one of the most popular companies that have that. But the only thing I don't like about their stuff was
the monthly fee.
Yeah, they're charging you a month-to-month fee to use their product.
It's
already installed in your thing. But.
Well, the Slaves thing, it worked the same way. I think it was Z-Wave. And they had a base station you had to buy, plus they had like a thermostat and a few little devices. So you'd have the base station and, say, for example, a door lock. So you'd buy those, then there was a
was it like a monitoring fee or something?
No, it wasn't even monitoring. It was
just to like rent their product, basically.
To use it, yeah. Well,
so
just
would make
like remote access. Any remote access, just pretty much using it at that point. There
so
was
kind of like a licensing fee every month.
Yeah,
a monthly licensing fee.
That was.
It looks like it's really easy to install Locketron too. You just loosen your deadbolt and just put there's a plate you just put over there, a back plate.
Yeah, and it snaps on, I believe, or
and that's
in.
About it. A couple of screws and you're up and running. Besides the app and stuff, but. That's actually pretty cool. Keyless entry, it uses the Bluetooth for sensing when you're walking up to the door where it unlocks it.
The only thing I don't like about that, though, I mean, it's a great idea, but, like...
Someone gets your phone.
Yeah, that, or Bluetooth items in general, it's a power suck. It just drains better. So, are you going to remember to leave your Bluetooth on, you know, before you leave work or whatever on the way home?
But if it's Wi-Fi, you can just also use the app to unlock it, or you have your regular key also, but...
Yeah, I guess that... Because
it's also Wi-Fi built in, so you can open up the app and just unlock it there, too.
That makes more sense. The Bluetooth thing... Not that I'm opposed to Bluetooth technology. I use it on, like, Google Glass and other weird things, but... unless it comes
to... And you have to use it with your Nuvo audio system.
Johnny.
Yeah! We love you, Nuvo.
Johnny likes to look stylish with his Google Glass on all the time.
People love to mock me.
Glasses over his glasses.
You're not going to see this! You're not going to see this! With your Google Glass.
No, I'm not. Now, last year, or I guess this year, the beginning of the year, David, you went to CES.
Yes, sir.
And you went to, I can't remember what they call it there, but you went to the home theater setup that was...
With the D-Box and
D-Box. It was D-Box, it was built in the chairs, you had Stuart Film screen, you had DVD-O doing the wireless audio videos from one side of the room for the receivers. I don't know if it was Integra receiver, or maybe it wasn't them, but... Who was it that did the room? So those guys aren't displaying, you know, a booth there, but they are, like, all collectively doing a thing
was
together.
Was that the Kaleidoscape, too? That was
Kaleidoscape, yeah. You had digital projection. Doing,
That's the one.
Goody stuff. Oh, it was it Elite?
I thought that was Elite one.
Elite, I thought it was Stewart. That's correct.
Is that the one, 2013?
Hello, my name is Mary.
Yeah, that's the one.
And so they have like their own little booth where they're showing off. So consumers, the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, can see, look, David's on TV. That's your goober, bud.
That was me, by the way, with like 2 hours of sleep. That's all I gotta say. So.
Okay, so you all can't see, we're staring at a
YouTube 60, video here.
60-inch Sharp Aquos TV. With my brother at the CES 2013 Elite Home Theater Experience.
And go on YouTube and search CES 2013 Elite Home Entertainment Experience. It was put on by Stuart Film Screen.
And 44 seconds into it, you can see my brother's ugly mug.
He's talking about stuff and like, it was amazing.
It was great.
And then you might see a little thing flash that said, Johnny Moda's brother or something weird or whatever. And everyone's like,
pretty much the only thing we're famous for.
Who the flip is that?
I'm the other guy.
And so, anyway, check that out. That was the beginning of this year, and I'm sure they're gonna have something similar to that. I know Draper's gonna be there. It was kind of a last minute. Draper B will be there, a last minute thing. They hit me up. A bunch of other people, but generally don't have like a lot of like AV manufacturers there. Usually, what you'll see at CES is like Samsung and LG and all the flat panel manufacturers mm-hmm. are generally there. And they have huge displays where it kind of like fits together on these big screens so you can kind of see like a digital signage thing with different TV models and they'll all say, you know, like, world's first and, you know, this and we did it before you guys and whatever. And
they have Samsung has like, was it 110-inch?
They have a new 110-inch
UHD.
Yeah, UHD 4K.
Was it last year, who was it, Sharp, showed off the 8K TVs with the Sharp?
Yeah, that's right.
I think it was Sharp, yeah. But it wasn't an LED TV. I think it was like an LCD TV.
Could have so smaller. You'll see Sony there with their TVs. You'll see LG. You'll see Samsung. You'll see probably a lot of off-brand manufacturers you've probably never heard of. For integrators, I like to go. It's not necessarily like a show like Cedia or the commercial one, which I always eludes me, Infocom, because I've never been. So please don't get mad because I've never been there.
How come you've never been there? Jeez.
In commercial
Johnny's a snob of some of these things.
Act like you've been there before.
No. I'm just being honest. So, like, it doesn't fit my business model. It's not the thing. It makes sense if that's the thing that you're into. But CDO is more my thing. It's more Resi. So this year, expect to see a bunch of 4K TVs, a bunch of OLED TVs.
And the Cinecurve TVs, of course.
The Cinecurve TVs, which are pretty sweet.
They've been doing it for a while on projectors, now we get televisions that way.
Yeah, so you're going to love mounting those, huh, David? Awesome. You're going to love that. That's where you just push them into, you sure you want to put it on the stand?
I think a stand. They've spent all this time developing the stand.
You want a nice BDI stand to go underneath this battle. That's what you want right there.
Well, if it's Samsung, it's like all their 9000 series, they keep like developing these really beautiful, like intricate stands.
Oh, God.
And it's
a classic. Yeah, but it's like a weird-ass, like...
Well, it looks cool, but the thing is, like, people who are going to spend this kind of money on the 9000 series are
put it on the wall
to have it mounted.
Yeah.
Samsung likes to change everything. Their stands are, the bases for the TVs are always different. Yeah. The hole patterns are always weird. Sometimes you gotta have these weird, like, spaces on the back.
Well, and that little bump on the bottom. The bump. Samsung things, like, yep. Hey, it's on this model. This next year, we might not have it there. Well, this model will have it.
Some have these rounded little spacer things that come with it. You have to put a screw into
the
top.
Oh, those little block things.
Yeah, right? to make it flush. Yeah, like, they just love to make, give you the challenge to mount the TV. It's like they're daring you to mount the TV sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Before we go any farther, again, I'd like to thank my sponsors, Hypersign.com. Hypersign. If you guys are in commercial automation, which I just admitted to that I am not in that space, really, digital signage is a huge thing that you guys should at least be looking at. If you go to Hypersign.com, they make a digital signage solutions, and if you guys are really big into PowerPoint, that's a cool thing, but don't use PowerPoint. There's other technologies for that kind of stuff. For the rest of us who are just general integrators, general salute.
General disarray.
Atlas Sound, atlassound.com. You can go there and they make speakers, racks, cables, amps, and all the interconnects that we all need, mic stands, all kinds of good stuff that we all get phone calls about on a daily basis. Even if it is the end of the year, Christmas, some sort of holiday, you can expect to get a phone call at midnight because something isn't working. You're welcome. AtlasSound.com. Check them out. You can get all those goodies and connect them for your...
You know, me and Steve, we like goodies. Me and Steve like to go to the shows just to get free stuff.
I'm a big fan of free stuff.
I'm the guy there with the free stuff t-shirt on. I'll take any kind of goodies I can get.
So CES is about 7 days away. CES series January 7th through the 10th. But if you're in the industry, you can get there on the 6th and
see the keynote
and get all the keynotes and all the good stuff ahead of time if you want to blog about it. But if you're not, 7th through 10th are the days to go. And as a reminder, I'm not going, but these two people will be there. So David, Steven will be there. Bumping them, give them high fives, buy them beers. They like beers. Vegas is fun for beers.
I think we fly out early on Tuesday, too. We catch a flight like at 6. We get down to Vegas around 7:30 in the morning. We're pretty much just going to drop off our bags and get ready to go to the show. I mean, after I get my chicken and waffles on. You got to be prepped to go to the convention floor, man. That's like a madhouse out there, so I might have a backpack with water bottles.
Yeah. Generally, at CES, you see all kinds of gadgets from wearable technologies, cell phones, TVs, panels, headphones, the weirdest tech and newest tech that's available, and that's a lot of times manufacturers like to release exclusive things on those, you know, at CES. Mm-hmm. That's a good time for the new X product from so-and-so. Not always do they do that, but that's generally when we'll see a lot of the newest technology at the beginning of the year at CES, Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. What are you guys excited to see this year at the show? I know, you know, we're probably going to see new Blu-ray players, smart TVs, like I said, headphones, OLEDs, 4K players, Red Ray, 4K.
I think I'm always looking forward to the TVs. As much
just
as, like...
the new panels? Like, to see, you know, like...
Well, last year, it was big on 4K. There was a lot of 4K, and then they were showing off a lot of OLED TVs, too, but... I want to see what's going to come out this year. You know, it's nice to see stuff that, in 3 or 4 years this will be out. But what's going to be the hot thing this year? Is everybody pushing 4K this year, or are they going to try to get out the Ultra HD TVs first this year? Is that going to be the big wave? Because we'll see a lot of them, you know, at CES. And then all of a sudden, like in a few months from now, you'll have your local retailers selling something. You know, the new Samsung, Sharp, whatever. I'm curious to see what's the main thing they're pushing this year. Is it going
to
be...
There have been a pretty good push on 4K towards the end of this year, I think.
There was
a lot of, you know, 4K TVs, and it was, like, you know, cheaper, I thought, initially. When 4K TVs came out, I think still kind of will be, that they were pretty high-dollar TVs because they're big, and...
They're a lot cheaper now. Like, I know at first I saw a lot of the Sony 4K TVs with the wide speakers on the side.
Uh-huh.
And then I know after Sony came out, well, they started pushing the ones without the speakers. It was kind of nice to see it without the speaker because that was a really wide TV.
It was, but it actually was, even not surprisingly, for a brand new like 4K TV, it wasn't actually that expensive.
It was like $5,000, I think. It wasn't bad considering
that was like Kuro prices.
Yeah, so that wasn't bad at all. And actually, the speakers sounded good. It just made the TV really wide.
They're front-facing speakers. Yeah. You expected to sound good.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a big difference. And bigger drivers and everything. So, it was impressive for someone that didn't want a sound bar or some other sound system. It was pretty good. You just had to have the space for that TV.
Yeah, makes sense.
But, yeah, I mean, they started pushing the Ultra, HD TVs there. So, we'll see if everybody's going to start to try to bring the Ultra HD TVs down. And then... And other manufacturers too, because there was the rumors of Panasonic was killing off their plasma lines, I believe.
I think they still are, right?
Yeah. Yes. Last I heard, they were killing off their plasma line, and I love their plasmas, but yeah. So are they going to make a push just for LED TVs?
Well, I think that they did that a while back, and that was the whole cool. They were getting rid of everything. Well, I know they had a partnership with Sony on their OLEDs, and I think that died off too. Didn't last very long.
What's going to be everybody's budget TVs? Are the budget TVs going to be LCD TVs, and then LED TVs will be
the new higher, I think LCDs are going to be...
Or OLED will be the new high-dollar TV when they...
I still feel larger. Weird, by the way, on saying LED and LCD when they're both technically LCDs, but it's the LED source is the difference.
Like, all right, we get it. It's not a TV made of LEDs.
But it seems that the industry kind of stuck with that naming, so we kind of just stick with the name.
Same 4K and Ultra HD, like we can never like pick a name.
Well, even 4K is backwards compared to what we used to, because we say 1080p, and right. Technically we should say 2K instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We went from 2K to 4K, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we were 1920 by 1080, which technically they're just rounding up there.
Right.
2000. It's close. But whatever, I guess it's the lazy way of doing it. Yeah, that's 4K, another thing. 2K, I really wish the industry would standardize and stuff, You think about the naming conventions on everybody on their TVs and stuff, what they're calling things like CEC and stuff.
Oh, everybody has their own name for it.
I mean,
Bravia Link,
AnyNet, like things like that. It's they all basically do the same thing. They're all based off of CEC, but why can't they just standardize on some of the naming conventions there? Or EcoSensor, or everybody's got a different name for eco settings for them.
Yeah.
The lighting.
Well, it's like we're integrators, but some people like to call us. I can't think of any of the other names, but there's like so many
fancy electricians.
The suits.
That's what people joked about. Is that just change out light bulbs for a living?
Yeah. You're like, I don't even touch light bulbs.
What are
you talking about? AB guy, integrator.
Yeah.
But it's all these different names.
It's quite a bit different now, because you think about it. Before, it used to be like an AV company specifically, and there's still a lot of just dedicated AV companies, but then you got electricians and stuff that are also going into the AV game, and everybody's kind of stepping on each other's toes, and they're doing each thing.
Electrical contractors are now trying to do it all. They're like,
everybody wants to do it all, so technically you kind of can't classify it as one thing.
There was this contractor in Sonoma whose company's name is The Phone Guy. And people, we're bidding this high-dollar system, it's a Nuvo distributed audio system, and there's so many zones and all stuff and speakers and blah, blah, blah. And then, the homeowner decided we're going to call The Phone Guy. Like, what? The Phone Guy?
And it's just a random name for a guy who does phones, but that's not his company name.
Instead of doing Jeff's
phone systems, but just call me The Phone Guy.
It's just a little switch where you go and push buttons in the calls, and that's what you get.
Speech selector.
Does he do AV systems?
He does. It does. Like speaker selector style things and volumes and all that. I mean, since then he might have changed, to like something else.
Yeah,
it's been a
while.
I don't come up with guesses.
But look at San Jose Honda Electron.
Another good one. All right, we're getting off topic here.
I see plenty of weird ones.
There's some interesting ones, but okay. What else? What do we got topic wise next?
Loud noises.
CES. By the way, did we mention you're not going to CES?
Nah.
On to the next thing. Go ahead. I just had to drop it in there.
CES is kind of like it's consumer electronics, and so it ranges from silly gadgets to we talked about panels and stuff. Just off stuff that isn't necessarily, something, for integrators to go and see. So it's not really one of those shows that's, dedicated for us. But there is, a lot of good range of things to see. There, it's more, to the consumer. Would you suggest for integrators to go to see just because they get to see the new panels or things like that? Or is it just kind of a show that you should at least just check out because it's kind of cool. It's got that cool.
CES is kind of weird because isn't it the receiver manufacturers usually aren't there?
Well, receiver manufacturers do not go to CES anymore either.
What's going on with that, man? I don't quite get that. A lot of them dropped off. We see speaker manufacturers at CES, you know.
We'll all the higher end ones. They're not really on the show floor.
Toyota goes there. I don't think BMW goes there, though. I could be wrong on that.
They might.
I know, there's Polk Audio, there's, I think, like, Snell, I think I've seen there. I've seen Martin Logan there.
There's also Paradigm, too.
Yeah, there you go. Paradigm is another one. But... So that's kind of a disappointment. It's nice to see the new receivers and stuff like that is paired with the speakers also. I don't know. Like, TVs, of course. But, like, with our industry, there's not really automation systems there. So it's kind of useless for in that sense.
Well, if they are there, they're a part of someone else's small little booth as a demonstration. Like, they have this... CES has their, what do you call it, the Connected Home Makeover little... series, and that might be like a small little hall.
Yeah.
And it's inside, where the consumer goes in, and this is where they actually get, beyond seeing all these panels and flashy gadgets, they actually can walk into this little small section, and they get to see, oh, this is what I hear about from, the phone guy who tells me about whatever.
Phone guy's the man, by the way.
This is, they get a, kind of a, their own little experience center inside of CES. Now, whether or not that changes, their thinking... they might take the next step into buying that Nest or Philips Hue or Locatron. That entry-level automation step forward into, eventually maybe that they do a larger system after seeing, what's possible. Because before, generally when someone does a home automation system, if it's their first time, they don't know what you can do and you give them things. Like, let's say on a lighting system or something like that, you talk about conditionals, and it's kind of like, well, why would I ever need that? And it really depends on, time of day things and things like that. But then there's other things, with just automation in general, they don't know what's possible because it's never been, to them, it's all new. Like,
oh, I just spit into their friend's house something like that.
The guy, my buddy down the street has this speaker that comes out of the wall or out of the ground. Or
I don't think it's supposed to come out of the wall. They just didn't screw it in all
the way. They just ran out of sheetrock. Like, it's fine.
It'll do. Just let it hang.
Like, let's not do it that way. Let's just do it this way.
Well, with designing automation systems, that's an interesting thing because there's so many different things you can do with the system. It's just... what does the customer want to do with it? Steve, when you guys are doing them, what's the most general thing? Like, the distributed audio plus control of your TVs and thermostat? Like, what is it
generally? Honestly, most of my business and how I get involved in these projects is actually lighting control. And then I get in from a lighting control standpoint, and then I'll put in AV, and I'll talk to them like, oh, you do AV too? Yeah. And then we'll get this, and then we'll expand. Like, I can control your HVAC, you can do motorized shades. But it's really the lighting, and actually... more so not even shades to be taken over the lighting side, have been the big driving factors for at least what I've noticed in the industry.
Are they specifically asking you for stuff like, oh, hey, can you control my TV and my distributed sound and my thermostat? Or are you telling them, hey, we can do this?
After I kind of saying like, oh, well, I can control this and that, and then they start kind of going crazy. Oh, can you do this? And like, yeah, of course I can.
All of a sudden,
if you want to pay for it, but
we can do anything as long as you're willing to pay.
Yeah, exactly. How much money do you feel like throwing at it?
Yeah, exactly. Anything can pretty much be done.
But yeah, it's like I said, most of the business I've seen is coming from either lighting control side or shading, which are kind of in the same territory, really.
So getting back into automation systems then, I mean, your company right now is transitioning from one automation system over to another one. Talk about the new automation system you're putting in right now.
Right now we're looking into Vantage, actually.
Vantage is known mainly for lighting, right?
They're a pretty big deal lighting control system.
They're kind of a big deal.
Not bad.
I saw all their new panels, and they look really, really nice.
And you guys rep both Lutron and Vantage, so that's for lighting.
Exactly.
You guys repping some pretty high up lighting.
Definitely, yeah, exactly. So Lutron and Vantage. And Vantage, of course, is a complete control system, whereas Lutron has a dedicated kind of like lighting system, where they've gone into adding in with QS is the HVAC, and that's kind of pretty much as far as you're going. Whereas Vantage goes, full audio, video, really anything else you want to throw at it, you can control through their system.
And those touch panels actually look pretty nice compared to...
I do. I really like those. Equinox. The new Equinox panels are really nice. And just beside, the looks of it alone are really nice. They're actually cost-effective compared to other touch panels. But the biggest thing I thought, in my opinion, was that the GUI itself is really intuitive and easy to use. You have like their, what do they call them? Card. It's like a card-based type thing, like you're used to and all these things. And you can have like your HVAC and a little thing. So quick at a glance, and of course you can click on it and you go down to like more advanced thing, controls, and you can dive even further and get all the stuff.
Is this programmed on a Windows-based computer or Apple also? Or?
This is the same thing as it was on their Equinox panels, is the same thing on their Equinox app, which is for Android and iOS.
And that's how it's programmed?
You program on their software.
Okay.
But a lot of things like the UI, you can actually, the user themselves can alter it on the fly from the panels or the touch panel.
Nice. And so they can customize the touch panel on the fly?
They can customize it, yeah, per user. And they can make up new users, like a user account control, and say, for example, let's say Steven, and my thing, like, oh, he only gets access to these things.
You can't do lights, but you can do TV.
Exactly. So I could set up a one account maybe for, if I had a cleaning lighting, and you just have basic lighting things, that's all they touch, and make sure they get that done.
Nice.
Yeah, and they block them out from all this other stuff.
So you can only just walk in and say, you want me to fluff pillow?
Exactly.
Didn't you, maybe I'm thinking of something else, but didn't you tell me something about, or it gives the homeowner an option to kind of make a couple adjustments on the fly, or no?
Lots of adjustments, actually.
Right. So
they
can,
besides the whole UI that they can readjust for themselves and say, on that main page, I would like to see, this here, or the lighting here, or this touch panel that I use, keyback that I use it more often, or this audio zone, they can actually alter completely, really everything. They can change the language. They can say, this is in Spanish for this user. It can be in Arabic and all kinds of stuff.
See, that's impressive, because with some of the bigger manufacturers we've done for automation systems, you can technically do it, just a lot of programming.
Right, yeah.
So that means to the homeowner, that's going to cost a lot of money and a lot of hours programming, debugging, and troubleshooting that system. And this is kind of nice. It's just already built in. It makes it much easier.
Exactly.
And, for a big majority of people, they might not need a bigger scale automation system. But, like, the touch panels on that one is what really got me. I was like, wow,
yeah.
This thing's look really nice compared to some other.
It's very nice. That 7-inch one they call the, I think it's the 7.3, is really beautiful. They have the 4.0, which is also nice. It's much smaller. Fits like in a single gang box. It is quite a bit. I think that the 4.1s will be coming out pretty soon, which is an actual just, it gives you much more metadata where the other one didn't have all that.
And you said some are power over Ethernet too, right?
The 7.3 and the 4.1 are both going to be power over Ethernet. The other one's on their two-wire bus.
So everything is strictly just over one Cat 5 to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that right there is amazing right there. That's awesome.
And it's the same thing for if you're using the cameras, because you can get the camera feeds on there. So you'd use like some sort of IP camera. I know the major one they're using is like IC real-time. You can connect to it directly from there.
Wait.
So technically, the customer themselves could, if I left and they end up getting a camera, they could actually get that camera's feed on there themselves and just hit like cameras and then they pipe in the IP address and possibly like, the username and password.
Nice.
And then that feed will pop on there.
They have iPhone and Android control too?
Yeah.
It's PoE over one Cat 5?
Yes.
Single Cat 5, yeah.
Isn't that, what's that technology? It's a new, well, not a new standard. It's been out for a couple of years, but,
Are you thinking of HD base 2?
Yeah, is that 2 Cat 5?
No,
that's HD base 2 is single Cat 5.
Single Cat 5. So, Gary Gravepub is having a debate about HD base 2 right now, about it being the standardless standard.
Standardless standard.
Yeah, well, we can recover that another time. Anyway, hi Gary.
Big fan of HD base
2. Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, no, I was just curious if that's what they were using in that.
No, it's just PoE. It's just all it means. Ethernet power, that's all it's going to these things.
Whereas some of the other ones have their own special bus and then a separate power line. And,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
So many different things. An audio video feed.
Right, you got to feed it with a bunch of different things on there. It's just a single Cat 5 going to it. It provides power, it gets on the network, and all your information goes through that.
And the thing I like about it, because it's a single Cat 5, you can repurpose it. If in the future you decide to go scrap it and go with some other system, you can use that Cat 5 for a keypad or for something else.
Right.
Or if you had a keypad and you want to upgrade a touch panel, if you ran Cat 5 there, you can utilize that same thing, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You don't have to get anything else to that wall right there. That's pretty cool. I like that. Unfortunately, we won't be seeing any of that at CES.
No, we won't. Fortunately. Well, I have my, as you saw, I have the touch panels and a few other devices in my office.
Uh-huh.
I'm waiting for my little, they call it the PDK, which is the personal developer kit, something like that. Just a little processor, a few items, I can start screwing around with it.
Sweet.
So yeah, it'd be fun to develop for.
Good times will be had by all.
Yes, it will.
for consumers, what would you say, like, the absolutely, or the one thing that they should absolutely see at CES in general? Not saying, like, you know, this year, because we all know, like, you know, Samsung and LG are probably going to announce, like, their new brand, you know, the world's first 4K, blah, 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 TV, curves, whatever that is. What do you think is, like, something for anyone to experience at CES would be a good thing that they should generally see? Whether, you know, even that's just TVs or just, if it's consumer, like, you know, just go check out that little home technology arena, if you will, even though it's kind of small, but...
What about Samsung possibly showing off the Galaxy S5 there?
Smartphones?
I realize that's just a smartphone there, but I just thought, hey, why not put it out there? No, smartphones cool. Also tie in. I mean, you think about it, you can
that's
use
true.
Them as...
Or, like, tablet for the as the control for home. And then,
yeah.
I think there's been a big debate I've had with other, like, journalists is that they say... They don't like, a lot of the other people I've talked to, and I always tell them, like, oh, you know, the, let's say the iPad mini, it's a really good size, you
yes.
know, for a remote, because it's not this big panel you're kind of holding.
Correct.
You could, it's kind of one-handed, it's still a little large for that. The Nexus 7 is debatable on the same deal. The 7-inch range of a tablet as a remote is a really good size for a remote, but, and we always talk about this, like, the tactile button is easier because you're not staring at the screen, you're just
right, especially the for buttons. Channels and stuff. Yeah,
right.
I've never been a big fan of using a touch screen for changing channels or controlling.
But people
TV.
Ask for that all the time, like
people
they always say,
do.
Oh, you can control
yes.
this with your iPad.
They do, but when they a lot of them when they use it, they think it's cool, but it's not the main thing they want to use.
They won't use it for very long.
I
yeah.
hate having to look down and type in channel numbers. I'm sure there's the people out there that love it, but I hate it. I like being able to feel it.
Well,
because
you're trying to enjoy
buttons.
Your media or whatever.
Yeah, I don't
want
to look down
to
at my screen
and
change it. And I don't mind, you know, pulling the phone out or the tablet to control lights or music or things like that or start the activity. But I like being able to feel my channels and my guide
volume.
Button and volume and stuff like that without having to look down and, you know, make sure I'm pressing the right button there.
Yeah. That's definitely a big one. I agree on that thing.
What's it called? So who has a hybrid remote that in your system? Savant? I can't remember the model.
They did, yeah. We actually put an iPod Touch inside of this
built in,
little
it's
controller.
It's a little,
it is a little wide,
little
but it has
wide,
the iPod Touch.
But you get the 2-in-1 combo. So it's not like the perfect handheld size, but it gives you the yeah the touchscreen interface and the tactile button.
Logitech Harmony Ultimate and Touch.
Ooh.
There are two remotes.
There you go.
They have a full gesture-based screen on there with hard buttons for volume up, channel, play pause, DVR, things like that.
Logitech.
There's, on the cheap side, yeah, I think those go for like $200 and $300 respectively,
that's
something like that.
That's not bad.
The Ultimate, I believe, is the RF version, so it'll work behind closed doors and stuff. It's nice for those people that want their equipment in like a closet or something like that.
Yeah. They don't have to run the little IR extenders.
Yeah. Do your little IR extension kit.
I sell those like hotcakes.
What else we got? What else we got, Johnny?
What is this?
Any advice for people going to CES? We're going to be finishing up the episode pretty quick, and it's just going to be a few more suggestions from you guys to CES.
Go see Totem. I'm a little biased, but I think you should stop by there anyways.
Didn't we see Totem first at CES a while back?
That is actually, yeah, exactly how we first heard about Totem.
And we had no clue who Totem were. Who knows? I apologize for that. I'm sure that people already knew who they were.
Sorry, Vince.
They seem to have gotten a lot bigger in the last like few years, it seems like, because I have heard about it a ton from people that never talked about Totem before.
Well, it's kind of like the weird effect, you know,
when you see a car.
Yeah, you got a car, like, nobody has this car, and you get it, everybody has that
apparently,
car.
Apparently, yeah.
You hear about that, yeah.
So, story is, we were walking through, I think, the Venetian that day in Las Vegas, and yeah, maybe we're kind of following the AVN award peoples over to their thing. They fall at the same time, and you just see, like, a brand,
not
like,
anymore.
Of, well, used to be. Going through...
Talking about prawn.
Going through the hotel, and, you know, they had a... What do you call it? There are different audio companies in the hotel lobby in different rooms, and we just... I think it was towards the end of the day anyway, and we were really, really tired.
It was.
And we were just like, oh, we had a full day of just checking out, like, gadgets and feed her, and...
We're talking about going, like, 2 or 3 more things and we're just getting out of there.
Bring comfortable shoes. So, yeah, we're like, all right, a couple more, and let's go back to the hotel.
That's a good suggestion. Comfortable
bring
shoes.
Bring comfortable shoes.
Bottles
like
of water.
Sneakers, something like that that's got good heel support.
Be there for
arch.
More than 2 days if possible.
Yeah. It's a big, several buildings, and it's large. And we had happened just upon Totem's room, and at the time, I had never heard of him. And we walked in there, and I wrote a blog about it, but I think they were, at the time, they just released the Tribe In-Wall series. Yeah. And that's what they were kind of showing off exclusively in that room. And I was surprised by the clarity of the speakers. They have these tiny, I don't know if they were 2.5-inch drivers or 3-inch drivers.
On the
In-Wall Tribes. And I, for a while, I was looking, I'm like, where's the subwoofer? And I'm looking at
4.5-inch.
They're 4.5-inch. And, you know, I see this man, Vince, at the time, and I was like, this guy looks like he spent some time, you know, like, you know, in the mad scientist room, just like creating stuff.
Doc Brown,
right? Just like 1.21 gigawatts of awesomeness. And he kind of looks like Kramer is who I refer him to. I love Vince. He's a cool dude, and he's cool to hang out with and talk to. We've found him a couple times. But I was trying to find the subwoofer for this room. You know, these speakers were just like kicking some bass, and there was no subwoofer. These things were just kind of just. I can't remember if every time I get a Totem demo, they play different types of audio, and I think they kind of always go back to some sort of electronic music, and I was surprised. And because I like that kind of music, and when they play it, I was like, whoa! And generally, it's got a lot of bass in it, and so these little drivers were just kicking, and no, just 2-channel, I believe, and they were just kicking, no bass, no subwoofer, lots of bass. And that's kind of how we found Totem, just by chance at the end of the day. And since then, selling Totem like they're going out of business. I mean, going out of like nobody's business. Yeah.
The coolest thing for me with Totem was falling year or two when we went to Cedia, and they had that little demo like cubicle with no top and all that loud music that was going
just
on.
Just a big open room kind of deal.
And they still blew away a lot of the stuff that we heard.
Yeah, most people, like, when you go to the things at Cedia or any of those things,
can't hear them.
Well, no, I've seen is a lot of them don't have their special rooms. Like, come into this room.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's built like an acoustically better room. And then Totem's was kind of like a wall, and like, here's our speakers.
They're like, there's a back and like 2 sidewalls. There's no ceiling, no front.
You can hear everyone talking throughout the show and all that stuff. You know,
much noise is going around, and you play their stuff, and you still were amazed at the quality. It was crazy.
Well, it's like the last years came by, was the big thing for me was the Kin Sub.
Tiny.
It's a small little footprint, and how much just bass is coming out, and how low frequency that thing would go. And it's tiny, tiny little subwoofer, which is actually my next thing I'm buying.
So small. Okay, as a reminder, CES, if you're not going, you're missing out. But if you are going, you probably know it's going to be January 7th through January 10th. I'm not going. I'm missing out. My 2 fellow AV insiders, David and Steven, will be there. If you see someone that looks like me, maybe a little cooler, it's probably them.
One with a beanie.
One with a beanie and one with the cool swag. It's probably just CES swag. CES swag, I'm not going.
CESwag.com, lovefreeshit.com.
You can follow them both on the Twitter. Steven _ Malta and Craze DJ with a K, KRAZE DJ. Twitter's the same on Instagram. No, Steven is Sabotage. It's spelled
funky. I don't know if I'm on Instagram.
I'm
on Instagram. I take that back.
Whoa. Welcome to the new world, Steve, on Instagram.
And, of course, me, it's JMOTA3, JMOTA3 on Twitter, Instagram, pretty much everywhere else except for, like, Google+ and Facebook, which is just Johnny Mota. You can check me out there. Email me at JohnnyMOTA3@gmail.com. And if you have any questions, give us a shout-out. Thanks again. This has been AV Insider. We're talking about CES and a year in review. Thanks for sticking around with us, and hopefully we'll see you in the new year.